You're listening to the 40 Thrive Podcast, the show created for women 40 and beyond, ready to shake things up. And now, your host, Jackie McDougall.
Welcome to another episode of 40 Thrive. Okay, so I really could say welcome to another episode of my walk-in closet because I normally record these intros in my home office / studio, but my husband's working from home due to quarantine. And I'm sure there are a few of you out there who can relate to the situation. But this is why podcasting is so powerful, because I can do it from almost anywhere with the right equipment, the right know-how. And so I'm really excited about that. So if you've been thinking about starting a podcast, finally making it happen, I've got your back. I'm hosting a 5-day podcast clarity challenge starting on April 27th that will help you get so clear on your podcast idea and strategize the show before you even get started. This is meant for those of you who are like, I kind of have an idea, or I might want to start a podcast one day, I'm not really sure. This is for you. And this is for you if you're like, I've been podcasting for a while and I feel burnt out and I don't think I have any strategy and I'm not really sure why I'm doing it. This is also for you. The 5-day podcast clarity challenge is happening. There's a link to it in the show notes here. This is the perfect time to understand why you want to start a podcast, how it would fit into your life, and how you could actually make some money doing it. I have worked with countless people over the past few years, and I have seen people hit the ground running, launching a podcast, and then burn out as quickly as they started. There's a reason for that. I have learned many, many lessons doing these shows, as well as doing a podcast before this, and I can teach you a few things. I'm so excited to host this 5-day podcast clarity challenge. I hope you'll join me. So head to 40thrive.com/episode67. And join me for the 5-day podcast clarity challenge. Okay, on today's episode, I'm telling you, this may be one of the most timely and important episodes that we've done. Dr. Rachel Barbanel-Fried, aka Dr. RBF, is a clinical psychologist, a writer, and an optimal performance consultant based in Massachusetts. I discovered a blog post that she wrote and had to have her on the show to talk about emotional flexibility. But here's what I didn't expect. We recorded this episode March 13th, Friday the 13th of 2020, having really no idea how drastically and quickly the world would change. So while we had just received notice that our kids would be not going back to school the following Monday, we had no idea. And so when we started talking about emotional flexibility, we really intended to do it in regards to real life and everyday normal life, not this. But I cannot say enough about how much it really directly relates to what's going on. And I am 100% confident that you'll get something out of today's episode. So let's just get right into it. Here's my conversation with Dr. RBF. I'm excited you're here. This is a topic that's extremely important to me specifically, this emotional flexibility, right? Because I think when we talk about resilience in women over 40, you cannot have it if you don't have emotional flexibility. And so I discovered this post that you wrote entitled Things That Bend Won't Break. And I'm like, yes, 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 we have to talk about it. So thank you for being here, first of all.
I'm so happy to be here. I've really been looking forward to this.
Awesome. And so tell me, why was there a catalyst, like why you decided to write about it at that time?
That's a great question that I'm not sure I have an actual answer to. I don't remember a specific thing that was coming up at that particular time, but it's something that I contend with all the time, both personally and in my professional work, that we get so bound up in whatever it is that's happening with us and it freezes us.
Yes.
And so we really need to learn this work of figuring out how to become more flexible. And what we see is that people who are more emotionally flexible are healthier, both in body, mind, and spirit. So it's just really important.
Yeah, it's ongoing. And I think in this particular age and stage, we've been so emotionally inflexible, some of us, for so long, we're not sure how to change it. So let's first talk about ways inflexibility can show up in our lives.
Emotional flexibility is really a type of executive functioning. So it's the part of your brain that's in the front. It's the part of the brain that helps us to hold on to and work with information, focus our thinking, filter distractions. We aren't born with these abilities, but we are born with the potential to develop them.
Okay.
And we do develop them throughout our life, right? You learn how to learn in school. You also learn how to be in the world from your family, from society, from your culture, right? And we all learn the way we are in the world kind of like honestly, right? Mm-hmm. I said, you know, we learn how to love the way that we were loved.
Exactly.
And we learn how to manage our emotions the way that they were managed around us. What happens actually after time is that we get really routinized. So that's what is known actually as wisdom, is the ability to make a snap decision. Oh, this is what I'm looking at. On the sort of more complicated side, it gets us really stuck.
The more wise we get, the more stuck in our ways we can become.
Right. So there's something called the default mode network, which is an organization of brain regions which interact with each other. They're distinct from other systems, and they are kind of most active when the brain is most quiet. Mm. Right. And by middle age, our habitual way of thinking is really very quick,
right?
Right. So we just go into this default mode. I see something, I know how to take care of this, right? That's the plus side. I know how to take care of it. I can kind of get a lot of stuff done. I don't have to kind of spend a lot of time looking and thinking and searching what's the right way to do this.
Right. And you find that you're on autopilot often. I mean, how many times do I go to drive, you know, pick up one of my kids from school or go somewhere, and I'm just so much on autopilot that I literally will be driving and I'm like, oh crap,
exactly.
Which kid am I picking up? Like, which gig am I going to? Like, I have to actually stop sometimes, or I miss the exit or whatever it is. And so you're absolutely right that, and I think that we rely on this autopilot for so many things. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And there's two sides to it, right? Because there's two sides at least to most things. The good side is it enables you to get more stuff done. It enables you to be able to, you know, talk on the phone while you're doing something else. It enables you to be able to hold one thing in mind while you're doing a second thing. The more difficult side is that
you don't say the bad news.
Right. Well, you know, I think the language that we use is really, really important. And like, there's good and bad to all of this, but the judgment actually just gets in our way of trying to understand what's happening, right? The more difficult side, the side that we get stuck in, is the piece where it's like, I just look at something and I think I know all about it. And so I don't have to change anything. I don't have to be aware of my perception. I just get, it's sort of like predictive coding, right? So we just get really, really fast at it.
Yeah.
But sometimes we have typos.
Yeah.
And then we send out a message that wasn't the message that we wanted to send out.
Right.
And so the same thing happens with our emotional world. And the idea of having emotional flexibility is the idea that we're not responding to everything the same way all the time.
Mm. Can you give me an example that maybe a woman over 40 might find common in her life where the difference between emotional flexibility and inflexibility?
So one example is, let's go back to, you're sitting in the car, right? And there's traffic and you're late and you're stressed and you get a phone call from your boss or you get a phone call from your kid who is in crisis.
Mm.
You need the ability to be flexible in that moment to respond differently depending on what the input and the output is. If you respond to everything just the same with the same level of like yelling or intensity, it's just not going to be a good result. You're not going to respond to your boss appropriately or your kid appropriately. Right.
And oftentimes that's exactly what's happening. We're responding to things in a way that isn't actually indicative of that situation. It's 100%. Completely based on the other thing, the driving, the tasks, the dumping coffee all over ourselves, like whatever it is. Totally. And then we're responding to that in life. So how do we not do it? I know you have steps to become more emotionally flexible. And thank you. Please help us.
I mean, one of the ways that I think about this and I think about like life in general is that it's all a practice. We're trying to figure out how do I become more flexible? So if you think about flexibility in a physical way, you want to be something that's more like a piece of Play-Doh rather than a ruler.
Right.
I have a bunch of fidgets in my office, right? Uh-huh. So people play with stuff. So I have this like thinking putty stuff, which at the very beginning is quite hard. But if you continue to kind of work with it and it warms up and it kind of becomes much more malleable and then it becomes like really stringy and you can really move it around. That's kind of the image that I like people to have when we're thinking about how do we become more flexible. This is not an on or off switch.
Right. And not to look at that putty that's more solid and just assume we can't do it because look, it's solid. So
it's solid. Right.
That's
right.
It.
I don't teach yoga, but I'm a trained yoga teacher.
Oh, cool.
And the people who tell me that, you know, I can't do yoga, I'm like, you're the guy that needs the yoga the most.
Right? Right.
That's exactly my point.
Yes.
Just because you can't bend your toes at this particular minute doesn't mean that you won't be able to do it in a week or a month or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Such a good point.
This is a practice.
Yeah.
And to go back to something you were saying earlier about, you know, you're sitting in the car or wherever in a meeting or on a date or whatever, and you're responding externally to something that's happening internally.
Mm-hmm.
This happens to us all the time.
Yes. And I want to sit with that for a half a second, because if I feel this way, I know that the person listening feels this way, that the worst part of it is feeling like it only happens to you. Like you are broken.
Oh, yeah.
You are incapable of being flexible, like that person doing yoga. So the fact that you are saying this as a trained professional, that this is very common, I just want people to understand, like, you know what? You're not broken. This is a completely natural place.
Mm-hmm. People are not broken. We may feel broken, but we are not broken. Because there is no such thing as perfection. It's all a practice of trying to figure out, like, what does it feel like right now?
Right. And I'm actually going to write down that word practice, because I think if we actually incorporate it into our lives, into our vocabulary, into our thoughts, we wouldn't expect such unreasonable things out of ourselves.
Oh, completely. One of the things I say routinely to the folks that I work with, and I work with all sorts of people, I work with individuals, I work with families, I work with executives, we're all subject to this because we're all stuck in our own heads. And so we all think that whatever's happening in our head is true.
Right.
So a feeling that we have, feelings are rooted in sensations, and feelings are valid. Mm-hmm. Feelings are ethically neutral.
Feelings are ethically neutral.
There's no good feeling. There's no bad feeling.
Okay.
Right? So you could feel really happy, but then if you're manic, that happiness doesn't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can feel a little bit sad or really, really sad, but just because you feel really, really sad doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you or it's a bad feeling. The feeling itself is just a feeling.
Right.
Right. But we then get really caught up in our judgments of our feelings. Yes. And that's where we start to get stuck.
Yes. When we apologize for our feelings,
chastise ourselves.
Yeah. Why do I feel this way? I don't know why I feel this way. And we just like beat the crap out of ourselves. Right. That's actually worse than having the feeling itself.
100%. Absolutely. No question. And one of the things I always ask people is like, would you talk to your best friend that way? right? Would you talk to your dog that way? Because most of us would not talk to anyone else, much less a baby, a pet, our best friends, in the way that we address ourselves constantly, all the time, internally.
You are so right.
You know?
And so changing that, understanding that even the way you talk to yourself is a practice. Mm-hmm. You could try again. That's a freeing place to come from.
That's my hope. That's what we're working for. And, you know, that's not to say that I don't also get stuck. That's not to say that there's no such thing as perfection. The idea is not that you're going to like go through life without ever having a negative thought or critical thought, right? It's the recognition that like I'm responding to you because of something else that's happening inside of me.
Right. And acknowledging that within yourself and also with other people. I think people are more forgiving than we give them credit for. And when we say, you know what, I responded to you because I'm in traffic or I dumped coffee on myself or whatever reason. I mean, it happens to me with my kids all the time.
Right.
You know, it's funny because flexibility, my oldest is on the spectrum. And so flexibility has been something that we've honored in this house. He's almost 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And so practicing it within myself at the same time mm-hmm. only makes sense.
It's hard, right? So first you have to figure out how to practice with the person outside of you, right? Like your son in this example, right? Mm-hmm. That like, okay, this is not exactly what I thought was going to happen. And then the discussion as a parent, the internal discussion is like, well, what does it mean about me as a parent if this is not going exactly the way I anticipated it?
Right.
And it's true in these sort of larger examples that you're talking about. It's true like when I'm trying to get my three kids out of the house in the morning mm-hmm. and it never goes according to plan. I could have the most organized, you know, like everything's packed the night before, the shoes are lined up, all of the things are, you know, sort of what I wanted them to be. And it's still utter chaos because it's not only about me, it's about these three other beings that are, you know, ping-ponging off each other and trying to get their needs met also.
Right. Right. It's chaos.
It's chaos.
So let's for a minute talk to the listener here who is maybe feeling like, I would like to be more emotionally flexible. I'm not sure where to start. What would you tell her?
So I think the first place to start is by paying attention. Mm-hmm. Because you can't notice, you can't change anything before you notice it. Notice when you get stuck. And how do you feel in that moment, right? So for me, one of the things that I noticed was, and I continue to notice this, is like when I'm responding in a way that I don't want to respond, it's usually because multiple things are happening at once.
Yes.
Right? So I feel really pulled, right? And usually I'm tired, I'm stressed, I'm depleted, maybe I'm hungry. Mm-hmm. I'm not only responding to the thing that's happening right now.
Right.
Right. And so the first thing in order to kind of change it is I have to notice it. I have to pay attention to it.
Okay. And that doesn't mean beat yourself up about it. It just means notice it.
That's right. You got it.
I'm learning.
Exactly. On the fly. It's exactly right. Because self-criticism is a double-edged sword, right? It works to a certain degree, right? Like if you are, you know, trying to get to be a better baker or you're trying to be better at a, you know, some sort of task, you have to say like, oh, this is where it went off the rails. I need to kind of like be more exact. Maybe next time I'll weigh the flour instead of putting it into a measuring cup or whatever, right? But after a while, we get that skill of self-criticism often gets really, really well tried and honed, and we get into it so quickly that we don't actually notice what's underneath. Mm. Right? So if I'm just criticizing myself because I'm yelling at my kids, ugh, I'm the worst mother, I'm horrible. It's that there was too many things happening. I was also answering a text on my phone, and I was also thinking about an email that was happening, and I'm feeling late, and I spilled my coffee, and then I yelled.
I got it. So pay attention with kindness, basically.
Yeah. I mean, with openness, right? Yeah, if kindness feels too hard at first, like, just be open. Like,
just don't be an a-hole to yourself.
Don't be so judgy, you know?
Again,
it goes back to this idea of practice.
Because that's actually your second step. So after you pay attention, then you can start to practice.
Right. So this morning didn't go as well as I had anticipated mm-hmm. or as I had hoped. So how am I going to redo this? So I'm not going to be on my phone when I'm trying to get my kids out of the door, right? So that's right. one thing. Yes. Or for me, I realized I come from a household of yellers. So yelling comes very naturally
well, you're
me.
East Coast, right?
I am a New Yorker.
Yeah,
yes.
Boston. Uh-huh. So I get, exactly. I hear you here. We're speaking the same language.
Exactly. Very loud language.
Yes, exactly. So it's very easy to carry that on into our own families and our own lives.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I am married to someone who in his family, yelling was not, it was mean. So it really creates a sense of dysregulation for him.
Interesting. Same for me and my marriage and my family right. in that yelling to us was just a way of communicating.
And if I'm not yelling at you, how do you know I'm paying attention? Like right? I'm here. I'm with you.
Exactly. You're welcome. I yelled at you.
Right.
So, wow, that's a whole other Oprah to talk about when you get married to somebody who communicates in such a totally different style.
Totally. 100%. And so this is something we've been working on together as a couple. Mm-hmm. And then we had kids. And so there's a different way of parenting. We're trying to figure this out together. So I have tried to figure out, you know, what's behind my yelling. And sometimes I'm yelling, not because I love you, but because I feel stressed.
Right.
Right. Because I'm trying to get everybody out the door and to school on time because I have to get to work.
Right.
There's all this stuff that's going on. And it's not just because culturally yelling meant one thing in my family. Right.
Right.
It's also, if you're actually being yelled at, you're not going to listen. So
yeah,
like yelling at my kids to get into the car actually doesn't help anybody. And doesn't make me feel better, right? So it's this practice of trying to figure out like how to slow myself down so I can pay attention.
Exactly. But how? How? That's the big question.
Right. So I do think that the most bang for buck, the most useful thing you can do is meditate.
Mm.
And it's- people don't want to hear that.
They really don't.
It's free. There are no side effects. There are no negative side effects, right? But it is really the most useful thing to be able to do. Mindfulness meditation has been shown scientifically, we're talking about science here, people, right? Has been shown scientifically to really help create new neuronal circuits so that we can actually use our brains better. Our brains wow. become younger, they're more agile, and we're going to be able to do the things we want to do from sitting and watching our breath for 10 minutes a day.
Wow. I mean, yeah. that's all it takes is 10 minutes, right?
10 minutes.
I mean, we all have that.
That right.
same, yeah, sitting there
waiting.
We have
10 minutes to beat up on ourselves. We have 10 minutes to scroll through Instagram.
Right. Yeah, I have all of the time in the world to beat up on myself, let's be honest.
Exactly.
So when you say mindfulness meditation, is that different from your everyday just breathing in, breathing out with your eyes closed?
So there are lots of different kinds of meditation. Mindfulness meditation is awareness of your breath and awareness of what your mind is doing. But there's transcendental meditation mm-hmm. and there's different kinds of yogic meditation. So mindfulness meditation is sort of the most come in when we say meditation. I think it's what people think of, but I just okay. want to differentiate between other kinds of meditation, which are also helpful, but are more specific.
Right. So this one is like anybody can do it almost anywhere. Please don't do it when you're driving. It's very simple in the breath, breathe in, breathe out, eyes are closed, and you just really
So
focus.
Your eyes don't even have to be closed.
Really?
Yeah. You could, so you could be mindful while you're driving. Right.
Okay.
So I don't want you to close your eyes while you're driving. Yes, that's yes. true enough. Right. Fair mm-hmm. enough. But like, so you could meditate lying down, sitting, standing, walking. It's this idea of becoming aware of what is happening in your body. Mm. Feelings are rooted there, sensations that occur in our body. Right? Right. So I can't tell you how many people, when I'm sitting with them and I say, like, how are you feeling right now? They look at me blankly. We're totally not focused on how we're feeling.
Right. And we're constantly filling them. Like how many times, remember when you used to go to a doctor appointment or anywhere really, and you would just sit and wait. Maybe there'd be a magazine that was completely outdated. You
know, there were, right,
but
right.
But now it's just like, if you're there, you're on Facebook, you're playing Candy Crush, you're doing whatever it is, like checking off your list. We don't allow ourselves those places to be bored. And I think if we make a little bit, just a tiny bit of a commitment to be bored, quote unquote bored, use that time to meditate, right?
You don't even have to label it bored, although I do, because I think that's a whole other great topic right there, like the beauty of being bored, right?
Yeah. I just mean that, and I use the sort of the air quotes of it, because that's where we know sitting by ourselves and having nothing to do is now equated with this like level of boredom versus this level of just being with ourselves.
Right. And so I think actually what happens in those moments is we have so little practice of just being with ourselves that people start to feel really weird, right? They start to feel anxious or sad or something that they're not used to being. And so we get really busy with distracting ourselves from that, right?
Right.
That's then how we get really, like we were talking before, how we get really stuck in these patterns. It isn't like if you turn on your phone and check your email when you get up, it's the question is, do you check your email before or during going to the bathroom, right?
Right.
I mean, everybody can answer that in their heads. I don't actually need to know the answer, but like—
I'm holding back.
Exactly. And then like, that's the reality is that we don't even go to the bathroom by ourselves, right? We can't even be by ourselves for that period of time. We're so distracted constantly.
Right.
And if we're so distracted constantly, then we're not aware of what we're feeling, and we have much less access to the sense of flexibility. Because if I'm distracted by my device, then when somebody wants to interact with me, I may be responding to them or I may be responding to the device.
Well, that's exactly right too, because it's one thing being in traffic and responding to real life happening, but how many times are you reading a post or an article or something and it's like getting you fired up inside, and then someone in your life says some like completely benign comment and you're ready to snap, and you're absolutely right. You haven't even set your intentions for the day. You haven't even set like, you know, your mood and your space without, and you've already brought in somebody else's baggage, and often somebody else you don't even know or care about.
Right.
But they have an opinion, and now it's like their opinion is completely poisoning your family. It's messed up.
And I see even more commonly than that, we're looking at photos of somebody else or posts of somebody else, and then we're judging ourselves in relation to that.
Yeah. I don't judge myself necessarily as much as maybe the average person, because I know that what you're posting is probably a lot of BS. I've lived enough life that your Hawaii trip looks amazing, but I know your kids were fighting. And I know that you might have a hangover, and I know that the hotel room was much smaller than you thought, or whatever it was.
Whatever it was, right.
If you have a marriage and children, it was not a perfect vacation, but I also believe in finding the perfect moments out of all of that chaos. And so I don't find myself judging or comparing much, because I also, I come from this place of gratitude of my own life, even the crap, you know,
Totally.
I get more fired up about people's opinions. And so that's where mine comes. But I totally hear you when you're talking about those who look at Facebook or look at Instagram and wonder why their life isn't the same or measure up. And just for the record, it does measure up. That other person is full of crap, or they're actually, selling
something. It's curated. It's curated.
Yes.
Right? So it's the people choose what they put out.
Yeah. And why would you put out anything other than the beautiful sunset on the vacation? Why would you put out that your kids are acting like little jerks? That's you. And you want to look back a year from now when you get that memory and get that you had that beautiful sunset. You don't need to be reminded about the other stuff.
Right.
You know? So in this practice, you talk about meditating, but you also talk about writing. I love this line that you write in the article: take the moment of suck and come up with other options. Tell me how to do that.
I am just by nature a journaler. I started journaling when I was 7. I have my first journal, which is red. It says diary in gold, ripped, you know.
Wow.
And the first thing I wrote was about my friend who I asked to go roller skating with that day. She said no. And then I saw her out roller skating with another friend.
Oh. That sucks.
Yes. Right. So there you go. There's the moment of suck.
Yes.
Yes. Right. And journaling gives us an opportunity. First of all, there's something about just getting it out.
Yeah.
They have proven that talking to somebody is more helpful than talking into a paper bag. Mm. They've done a study on that, believe it or not.
That pays your mortgage right there.
Exactly. But writing is also helpful. Mm. If you can actually write versus typing, there's something about the feeling of writing, which is helpful. It's meditative for most of us. We don't have to think very hard about how to physically write. Mm-hmm. And once it's out on the page, most of us have a sense of relief and release. Hmm. So the prompt that I do most mornings is I just start with a blank page. I put the date at the top and I write, I feel. And then I write for a page. Sometimes the page is more full. Sometimes it's two. Sometimes it's less full. I'm not writing to reread it. So I don't explain who people are, right? Mm-hmm. I talked mm-hmm. to Jackie today on a podcast. We had a great time. It was really fun. But I don't go into the explanation of who you are and how we met, and, you know, because it's not going to be read, and it's not going to be read by anybody else. It's just for me.
And this is a really important point, because when you go back to that perfection versus mm-hmm. practice, I think there are a lot of people who don't journal or write because they think it needs to be like, you know, the next bestseller. And this mm-hmm. isn't about you even reading it later. This is about just getting it onto the paper, correct?
Right. It's about getting it out of your head and onto the paper.
Right.
5 minutes.
We all have that.
I mean, most, you know, some days I don't, but most days I do. You know, I'll share with you, I had a really profound experience when I was in my 20s that I was writing in a journal, and I finished the journal. And so I went back just to look at the first page, and the circumstances of my life were completely different. I was living in a different country. I was living with different people. I had a different job. I had different friends. Everything was completely different. The emotions were identical.
Really?
And that was such an aha moment for me, because I was like, oh, I'm carrying myself wherever I go. This does not have to do with the externals. This has to do with what's happening inside of me.
Wow. That's profound.
It was. It was a really profound moment for me. And so I don't go back and reread my journals that often. I really mm-hmm. don't. But in that moment, it was worth everything to have had that experience, to be able to recognize the emotions are what's happening to me, not what's happening inside of me, not because of like my friend did this, or, you know, my job sucks or whatever it is. It's because of what I'm carrying, what my perspective is.
That's such a great point. And I think we could all learn from that moment that you had. So thank mm-hmm. you for sharing that. You talk about nourishment. Mm-hmm. Now, are you talking about just eating well, or what does that mean to you to nourish?
Right. So I'm not a nutritionist, a dietitian, so I can't give like any nutritional advice. Okay. I am talking about really nourishing yourself. Only you as an individual can figure out what that means. We definitely need enough serotonin and dopamine, which are neurotransmitters that our brain needs, mm-hmm. you know, in order to feel good. And we can get a lot of them from, you know, eating sort of a well-balanced, vegetable-forward, complex carbohydrates, fish, whatever. You can figure it out. Everybody's okay. nutritional needs are different. Mm-hmm. But most of us, particularly women,
right,
we're not trained to eat in a way that nourishes us. We were trained either from a place of deprivation, mm-hmm. right? I'm only going to eat a salad because the salad is going to help me fit into a bathing suit, or help me fit into some idea of what I'm supposed to be like as a woman,
right?
But that's really different if we eat that salad because it's like, I feel my body needs the greens, right? Like right. I'm currently obsessed with Caesar salad. And so I've been making different Caesar salad dressings. I made Ina Garten's, and I made a vegan one, and I made a this one. Because like right now there's something about the, like it has a very high fat content. So I think mm-hmm. that's what is driving me. Mm-hmm. But like I literally have had Caesar salad most days for the past like couple of weeks.
Wow.
Right? And that feels really nourishing to me right now. But that's not what I'm going to say to you, like, oh, you should go eat a Caesar salad and see how it makes you feel. It's really about paying attention to, like, what do I need? Do I need a cup of tea? Right? Do I need something that's really going to, like, take care of me in that moment?
Right. I feel that way with poke bowls. I love them so much.
Yes, exactly.
And then you talk about exercise. And I'm telling you, man, like, this is where people are like, oh, forget it. Now I got to exercise. But whoa, what a difference movement makes with our emotional flexibility. Do you agree?
100%. Again, there's like endorphins that get released when we exercise. Our heart rate increases. And here's the real kicker. Is that if you're exercising, especially cardiovascular exercise, your breath changes. And so if you're feeling stressed, we breathe much more shallowly. And deep, regular breathing helps us feel calmer. I can go into the science. I don't have to go into the science.
I love science.
So like that's part of why meditation works. That's part of why yoga works. It's part of why running works, because we're breathing out the, you know, toxins from our cells and it calms our amygdala down, which is the tiny almond-shaped part of your brain that is the responsible for the fight, flight, or freeze response, right? Yep. So like you get anxiety, you get panicked, your amygdala lights up, all these bodily functions start shutting down because we're getting ready to fight the tiger or flee from the tiger that's chasing us, right?
Right.
When you run or you practice yoga with, you know, pranayama breath, or you sit and meditate and practice long exhalations, it brings all of the high anxiety biomarkers down. Right there, that's flexibility. You were anxious, now you're calm.
Do you have any apps or programs or anything that you use for exercise or meditation that you'd recommend to your patients or to my listeners?
The best exercise is whatever you like.
Yes. The one that you'll do.
The one that you'll do. Right. And when I'm talking about exercise for, you know, emotional flexibility or exercise for mental health, that is also different than exercise for cardiovascular health, right?
Okay.
You're doing cardiovascular health, it's some combination of how many minutes and how perceived exertion, blah, blah, blah. I don't care about that. If we're talking about this, 15 minutes.
Okay.
That's enough to kind of help you get over whatever slump you're in. Right? And it could be running, cycling, walking in the woods, walking your dog, whatever.
And I love that you say 15 minutes, because I've talked about it all the time that we all think we need motivation to do the thing, when in fact doing the thing creates the motivation. And so if you're telling yourself and you're telling your patients that 15 minutes is enough, there's a good chance they'll extend it to 30, to 45, to whatever it is. But 15 being good enough is a great start.
Yeah. So, I mean, this morning, you know, it was a particularly stressful morning for me for a bunch of different reasons. And I was on the phone with my husband. We're trying to figure out, you know, it's a Friday morning. There's a lot of shifts going on. The weekend is coming up. And, you know, I'm going through my list of like, I'm going to go do this and I'm going to go do this and I'm going to go do this. And my husband was like, get on the bike.
Wow. Good for him.
Get on the bike. He was like, because he was like, if you can't do it for yourself, do it for me. Get on the effing bike.
I love your husband. Tell him good job.
I love him too. He's a good guy.
Because we can deal with so much more.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Yes. Right. And it was so clear to me sitting on the bike. I was like, I don't want to be here. I have all these things. And I like made myself turn my phone off. Right. Nothing's going to happen in this 15 minutes that I can't deal with in 15 minutes.
Right.
Right. I'm just going to be here for 15 minutes. And I felt much better after 15 minutes.
Yeah. And then you could take on it, because that's a lot for you to deal with. And, you know, my phone while we're recording is over there and I know things are happening right now. Things are about to implode.
Right.
And so I'm with you. And when we do get that time, I don't know if it's not just the physical activity, but the time to actually put ourselves first and remind ourselves that we matter carries us through the day in many ways, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's that adage, right? You have to put your own oxygen mask on first.
Right.
Because otherwise, when I go get my kids from school and we're home and in the house and trying to figure all this stuff out for the next month, I am not going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I am not going to be pleasant.
Yes. Get on the bike every single day.
Exactly. Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about sleep. Sleep is really important to being emotionally flexible. Yes. You write it in your article, so I assume yes.
Sleep. So I'm a little bit of a sleep fascist. Mm. Sleep is really, really, really important for everything that we do.
Yes.
Everything. And most of us who are parents, we spend a lot of time like focused on our kids' sleep. We spend a lot of time focused on our kids' nutrition, and we don't pay attention to that in ourselves, mm-hmm. right? If you don't get enough sleep and you don't get specifically enough REM stage sleep, your brain gets stuck. We all just went through a time change. That means the whole country is basically jet lagged for a week.
Yep.
Right? And we know, again, science, right? Statistics, we know that the week of the time change, there are more heart attacks. There are more fatal car crashes.
Really?
There's like this whole list of things that happens twice a year, every year when we change our clocks.
Wow.
Because everybody's going through the world sleep deprived and messed up. And so if you're not making sure that your sleep is on target, you're basically doing that to yourself.
Wow. I had no idea that that all happens. And yet here we are, even though we've, I think, voted it down, we're still changing the clocks.
Yep.
I'm not really sure what's happening, but
yeah.
For you personally, how do you make sure that you're getting that really important REM sleep?
So there's a lot of different technology that you can use. I'm not somebody who loves technology that much. I have gotten different kinds of like rings and bracelets and all these things. And I usually find that I'm interested in them for a little bit of time. And then I sort of get annoyed by them. Mm-hmm. So I ask a couple of questions. How easily do you fall asleep? How well do you stay asleep? Right? So many of us wake during the night, but if you wake, can you fall back asleep?
Mm-hmm.
And do you wake feeling rested? Most people don't answer yes to that.
Really?
Most people that I've talked to are like, unless they've done a lot of work on trying to like really get their sleep habits, what's called sleep hygiene, but like really get work that out. Most people don't wake up feeling rested. How many people actually wake up without an alarm?
Oh, yeah. And also just going through perimenopause and menopause, and there's so many other things happening in our bodies that really gets in the way of sleep.
If you share a bed with someone, forget about it. It's really hard.
And he snores.
Yes.
Right. Not that so I would ever be talking about my husband at all.
Right. So I sleep with earplugs. I sleep with a mask on. I have a noise machine. I am like, don't mess with me. I need this. It is very important to me.
I love that.
You know, I make sure my phone is in another room. I get into bed a good half an hour to an hour sometimes before I'm actually wanting to be asleep so I can give myself time to wind down. My sleep game is on point. I don't sleep well. I am a disaster.
Sleep, get on the bike. Sleep, get on the bike.
Exactly. Some water, some food. It's not that complicated.
Awesome. And finally, you talk about in this practice, talk. And that could mean finding an amazing therapist like yourself, but it doesn't have to mean that. What are some other ways that you recommend?
Talk to a friend.
Mm-hmm.
We sort of spent some time bashing social media before, but social media also gives us opportunities to connect with people who are dealing with some of the same issues, life stages that, you know, may be a world away, right? So can you just connect with somebody who sees you, helps you not to be critical of what your feelings are, and just says, yeah, I've been there. It's going to be okay. Or here's something I've done. Or like, I love you, even if you're grouchy.
Right. That's what the 40 Thrive community was based on. Mm-hmm. Truly. 2,100 women who are like, I've been there. I got you. These are some of the things that worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and being authentic, being able to come in and not be perfect. Like that's my whole mission right there. So you're absolutely right. Social media can be something, especially when people are not going to work and people mm-hmm. are not going to school and the kids are home for a month, you know, mm-hmm. that sometimes the only option we have is to log on to Facebook or something. Mm-hmm. And there are things that, whether it's the 40 Thrive community or something else, mm-hmm. there is support out there and someone mm-hmm. who does understand. Mm-hmm. I love that you mentioned that, because we can get stuck in a world of negative social media talk, but my whole platform is built on it.
Yeah, it's a great platform. I mean, that is a really brilliant platform to build everything on, because that's what we need. We need connection. We need to feel connected to ourselves, and we need to feel connected to people around us. And if we can do that, then everything else feels a little bit easier.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, connection is everything. I always say, like, mentorship, connection, all of that, find it wherever, whether it's church, whether it's your neighbor, whether it's your, you know, mall walking group, whether it's online in the community or listening to podcasts, there's connection and community out there.
Yep.
So do you only work with people in person?
So it depends on the kind of work that I'm doing. I work, mm-hmm. so I am a clinical psychologist and I'm licensed in Massachusetts and New York. So I can only do psychology, you know, therapy work with folks who are in Massachusetts or in New York.
Yes.
But I do a lot of work with executive coaching and peak performance coaching. And so those people, I work with people from New Zealand, from California, from Europe, from wherever. It's really a lot of the same stuff that comes up, but it's like a slightly different packaging, I guess.
Right. Basically, because of licensing and all that. But the beauty of it is you are still who you are. So you bring to this executive coaching the same person that you,
yes.
and education yes. and experience that yes. you bring to your in-person therapy clients.
That's right. And the executive coaching really grew out of my therapy experience. That one of the most amazing things of my professional career is that my professional career has really changed throughout my life. Mm-hmm. So that as I'm sort of getting into this phase where, like, the people I'm working with are now, you know, higher level executives or who are doing more complicated, bigger things in their lives, who sort of said, okay, I've checked off all these things that I was supposed to do, right? Went to college, got married, had a family, have a mortgage, whatever it is. And now I want to really work on myself. I want to really work on feeling like my best self. Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of work. It's just slightly packaged differently.
And I love it. I love that it helps all these people around the world actually be able to work with you. Mm-hmm. Because I know that there's somebody listening right now who is like, she needs to be in my life. And so how would you, I know we can send people over to drrbf.com. Mm-hmm. Is that how they would schedule any of this coaching with you?
Yeah, that's the best way to get hold of me. I have a website, there's a blog there, you know, I do, and that's probably the easiest way to get hold of me, and we can chat from there. And, you know, being able to do this online has been amazing for me to be able to work with folks from all over the world. It's just been such a terrific opportunity to be able to say, oh, right, even though you live here and you have this kind of experience, like, it's the same set of feelings underneath.
Right.
It's the same set of biological needs that we have right. underneath. Mm-hmm. It's the same practice.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate your expertise and your East Coast attitude. and I mean, the other time I talked to an East Coast attitude doctor was Dr. Sarah Sarkis, and she's yes. actually the one who introduced us.
She is. She yes. says hello.
She's amazing. Another she Boston is. Girl after my heart, you know. So I just really appreciate your, you know, no BS approach. And, you know, when I say no BS, I mean it with compassion and understanding. Yes. It's just like, to me, that is the best of both worlds, when somebody can be direct and forthcoming, but also be compassionate and understanding mm-hmm. and lovely. And so you definitely embody all of that.
Oh, thanks. Thanks so much. It's been really fun talking to you. I really had a great time.
Thank you so much for listening. Let me ask you two quick questions. Have you subscribed? It's easy to do and helps you get alerts when a new episode is up in your favorite podcast app. And have you shared it with a friend? That's the simplest way to help grow the show and help more and more women over 40 thrive. I really appreciate you pressing play today. I know you have a lot going on and it's not lost on me. Until next time, take care and keep thriving. Spring has sprung, and with the change of seasons, sometimes comes an increase in vitality. If you're feeling in the mood for a little more personal time, may I suggest Coconut. Coconut is all about providing clean and natural ingredients when you're enjoying your most intimate moments, with or without a partner. Naturally safe products developed by people who are obsessed with quality. Get 15% off with promo code GRONASS at grownasswoman.guide/coconut. That's 15% off with promo code GRONASS at grownasswoman.guide/coconut.